Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF. This is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Shlomo, Pesach Ben Dov, Meir Ben Yecheskel, and Yosef Ben Meir. Before we get to the many questions from our great JTFers this week, I want to speak about why it is so essential, so desperately needed, that our voice be heard by the people of Israel, as well as by the American people here in the United States. Why it is so important that our movement in Israel, Hayamin HaMiti, reach the people of Israel with our message on a regular basis, that we've got to reach huge numbers of people in Israel. Why it is so essential, and why it is so essential that JTF reach large numbers of Americans here in the United States. Why it's so important to the future of Israel and America. We once again this week saw other reasons why JTF's message is so important. In Israel, once again, they want to expel Jews from their historic biblical homeland in Judea and Samaria. This time at Beit Ezra in Hebron. Hebron, or Hebron in English, Hebron is the second holiest city in the world for the Jewish people. It is the city of our forefathers, where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are buried, and where our also the mothers of the Jewish people are buried. And Hebron is absolutely essential to the survival of Israel and the survival of the Jewish people, spiritually and physically. And there's a Jewish home and Jewish property called Beit Ezra, and they want to throw the Jews out of their home. They want to remove them once again. Hundreds of Jews have already been expelled by the Netanyahu-Lieberman regime since this evil regime of treason came into power nearly 4 years ago. They have already thrown hundreds of Jews out of their homes. They allow Arabs to build tens of thousands of illegal homes, buildings, and properties all over Israel. But Jews are not allowed to build, even when they have permission. They're not allowed to build in their own homeland. All of a sudden, appeals and orders are issued by the Supreme Court and the government and the media to throw the Jews out. The sickness, the self-hatred, the evil, the treason is beyond the pale. And once again, it's happening in Beit Ezra. Now, how does this affect our movement? Well, look at all of the people on the so-called right who are supposed to be opposing this, who are supposed to be the voices against this. All the so-called right-wing Likud members who were elected to the Likud list. What are they doing about it? Are they threatening not to support the Netanyahu-Lieberman regime if they expel Jews? Did they threaten or did they withdraw their support from Netanyahu and Lieberman when they expelled hundreds of Jews already several times in the past 4 years? When Netanyahu came out in favor of a so-called Palestine state, which is national suicide for the Jewish people, when Netanyahu has refused and failed to take the essential action against Muslim terrorist Iran, which is building now nuclear weapons, a nuclear threat, a threat of nuclear holocaust, and Netanyahu is doing nothing about it? Have they withdrawn their support for this government to show they will not be part of this treasonous so-called leadership? No. Once again, these people who call themselves right-wing, and everybody said, oh, they were elected to the Likud list, look how right-wing they are. They do nothing. They do nothing while Jews are thrown out of their homes and while the Arabs are taking over the whole land of Israel. Nothing. Moshe Feiglin, from Manigut Yehudit, he's supposed to be the real right-winger. He continues to support Netanyahu and the Likud. He supports the expellers of Jews from Judea and Samaria. He says, Netanyahu is the best prime minister for Israel. What, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? Netanyahu is a disaster. Israel's position has worsened in every area during the time he's been prime minister for the past 4 years. And the same thing happened when he was prime minister in the late 1990s. He's a disaster for the Jewish people. He already gave up Jewish land in the Y agreements. He surrendered 97% of Hebron, our holy city, to Yasser Arafat the last time he was prime minister. This time he's already expelling hundreds of Jews and has already agreed to a so-called Palestine state and is sitting back and doing nothing while Iran is building nuclear bombs. And then He finally responds to Hamas firing thousands of rockets and missiles into southern Israel and paralyzing all of southern Israel, and then agrees, after barely scratching Hamas, agrees to a ceasefire because Barack Hussein Obama and Hillary Clinton, the Jew haters, demanded that he agree to a ceasefire. I mean, this leader is a disaster for Israel. And Moshe Feiglin says he's the best we can do. He's the best prime minister for Israel. Because Moshe Feiglin wants a seat in the Knesset that is part of the Likud. And so in exchange for that, he surrendered all of his principles. Moshe Feiglin, by the way, also supported Silvan Shalom, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro. Silvan Shalom, his wife, Silvan Shalom's wife, is the owner of Yediot Acharonot, an extreme left-wing anti-Semitic newspaper that works day and night to destroy the Jewish state. That's the wife of Silvan Shalom, and he's high up on the Likud list. He's one of the Likud Knesset members, and was a minister, and was even deputy prime minister of Israel. And Moshe Feiglin supported that traitor and made a pact with that traitor in order to get his seat in the Knesset. Naftali Bennett, who's running on the so-called Jewish Home Party, promises to support Netanyahu. And in fact, Naftali Bennett was one of Netanyahu's top aides in the past. Naftali Bennett, to keep ministerial positions that he's certainly going to get in the next government when his party becomes part of the next coalition, they will not defend Jewish rights. They're going to defend their seats and their power, not the rights of the Jewish people. Michael Ben-Ari and Aryeh Eldad are running on a party, and Michael Ben-Ari actually calls himself a Kahanist. What a fraud that is. These two recommended Netanyahu to be prime minister. They backed Netanyahu when he was forming his government. They recommended to the president of Israel that he name Netanyahu as prime minister. And they're going to do it again if they get into the Knesset again, God forbid. Ben-Ari and Eldad and Bennett and Feiglin, all these so-called right-wingers that I just mentioned to you, have done nothing to really solve this problem. And there's only one solution, that's to build massive resistance in Judea and Samaria. Jews from all over the land of Israel must come to Judea and Samaria every time there's going to be an expulsion. And there has to be massive civil disobedience, the way Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi and others who are now praised historically, that has to be done by Jews. They have to block with their bodies. Tens of thousands of Jews have to be there and have to block with their bodies any expulsion from the land of Israel. That is the solution. That happened in Amunah, and when it happened in Amunah, it was a bloody scene because the police were beating these brave kids that were there resisting. But when it happened in Amunah, after that was seen on live Israeli television, the Israeli government was unable to expel Jews or touch Jews in Judea and Samaria again for the next 2 years because the people of Israel were on the side of the Jews when that happened in Amunah. When Jews do fight back, when they do resist, when they stand up for their land, that is when they win. We need massive civil disobedience. We could have saved Gush Katif. We could have saved the Gaza district. We could have prevented all the terrible surrenders and retreats. We could have even prevented the Sinai retreat if there had been mass civil disobedience and mass resistance. That's what Rabbi Kahana, Zichrono Livracha, was saying in the late 1970s, even in the time of the Sinai retreat, and he was ridiculed for that. But in Amunah, we saw that it worked. Everything Rabbi Kahana was saying since the 1970s, which all the other so-called Jewish leaders and all the other rabbis and all the political parties and all the pundits all said was ridiculous. When Rabbi Kahana's solution was put to the test in Amunah and there was mass resistance, it worked. It was the one thing that worked. And we are the only group that's advocating that now. We are the only group that's pushing for that now. The only group. No one else is. And that's why it is so important. It is so important for our message to be heard by all the people of Israel. Because this is not just the terrible reality that Jews are being thrown out of their home. That's terrible in and of itself. But this forfeiting of the land of Israel, this handing over the land of Israel to our enemies, this endangers the survival of the entire Jewish people. Jews everywhere and supporters of Israel everywhere should be alarmed every time this happens and should be ready to get up and do whatever it takes to prevent this. And the answer is what we're advocating. And that's why we've got to reach the people of Israel on a regular basis with our message. We're not reaching enough. We're reaching We reach thousands of people. You could see that. You see that we have large numbers of videos on our on the internet. We reach thousands of people. In fact, we actually have reached hundreds of thousands of people. But that's not enough. We've got to have an audience of hundreds of thousands of people for every video every week. We've got to reach that point where we become like the Rush Limbaugh or the Sean Hannity or the Fox News of Israel. If we were in that situation, if we were like the Fox News of Israel or the Rush Limbaugh of Israel or the Sean Hannity of Israel, there would be mass resistance and they would not be able to do what they're doing. We would have a mass movement. I would also be in Israel, by the way, and I'd be in the Knesset with a big party, and we would eventually be, we'd be on our way to power if that happened. The people of Israel desperately need to hear our voice because they're not hearing voices of truth and uncompromising idealism. And by the way, when I say idealism, people, you know, the word idealism has a bad connotation in this evil generation of ours. Once upon a time, if you were an idealist, that was considered to be noble. Now that's considered, oh, you, what are you, crazy? You're an idealist, you're unrealistic, you don't know what you're talking about. It's actually an insult now to call somebody an idealist. Can you imagine that? So there are Israeli Jews and people in the United States who say, we're just a bunch of idealists. And they actually, to them, it's an insult. I think it's a compliment, but they think it's an insult. In other words, we're unrealistic. No, the idealists who say there has to be mass resistance are the true realists. The idealists are the realists. The idealists who believed that we were going to have a Jewish state for 2,000 years in exile, they were the realists. The idealists who said the Jews would return to their homeland against all odds, they were the realists. The idealists who said we were going to free Soviet Jews. And I remember when I was a kid, they always said, well, you can't free all of them. I mean, most of them are not going to get out of Russia, let's face it. That's just not going to happen. The idealists who said, no way, we will never give up on saving even one of our fellow Jews. We want every one of them to have the right to leave, and we want to get them out, and we intend to open the doors of the Soviet Union. The idealists who said that were proven right. It's the idealists who historically are proven right. God is on the side of the idealists. And I'm not saying, by the way, that people should just blindly, foolishly advocate things. Obviously, we have a realistic strategy. We, even idealists, have to have a realistic strategy to implement their vision. And we do. And we do. And we've been right again and again. And that's why the people of Israel have to hear our idealistic, realistic message. You see, the difference between us and all the others that I mentioned before, all those names of people that I mentioned before, Ben-Ari, Eldad, Bennett, Feiglin, Netanyahu, all of them. The difference between us and all of them is that they put their own personal political interests above the interests of the Jewish people. We put the interests of the Jewish people above our own personal interests. That's why I went to prison for 5.5 years. That's why I was willing to be on probation or house arrest or parole for another 12 years. And that's why I was willing, and that's why I've been expelled from Israel for the past 17 years. That's why I had to sacrifice over 30 years of my life. Because I put the interests of the Jewish people above the interests, above my own personal interests. And Rabbi Kahana did the same thing. And true idealists who are realists do the same thing. And that is the type of leadership that Israel needs. Those are the type of leaders who will bring redemption for Israel and for the righteous throughout the world. Our voice has to be heard. We have to tell the Jews of Israel, you're better than this. You have a higher calling. You were meant not to be just some nation like Shimon Peres, that animal said, we're going to be the Hong Kong of the Middle East. We'll trade with all the Muslim Nazis and we'll be like the Hong Kong of the Middle East. No. The calling of the, you have a higher calling. You were called upon to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. That's the destiny of the Jewish people. God help you if you try to escape that destiny. You face punishment if you try to escape that destiny. But eternal reward if you live up to what God commands you to do. That's the message we've got to give to the Jews of Israel. And it's a message that desperately has to be heard. And here in the United States, same story. Look at what's going on. Same sellout, same story. Look at the Republicans in the Congress, Speaker Boehner and the Republicans in the Congress already accepting higher taxes. I mean, this is an obscenity. Higher taxes? You mean the problem with America is that we don't pay enough taxes to pay for parasites and leeches who are too lazy to work? We don't give them enough handouts? Hard-working people aren't giving enough of their paycheck to these leeches and parasites who don't want to work? That's the problem? We should be giving even more? Obamacare is already raising taxes on us. And now we're going to raise taxes even more on the American people? And the Republicans are agreeing we need higher taxes? And by the way, higher taxes on small businesses, which is when they say higher taxes on the wealthy, this is not higher taxes on the wealthy, this is higher taxes on small businesses. The Republicans are going along with this? You know what that does to the economy when you tax small businesses? Small businesses are suffocating from taxation already. You're going to increase the taxes on them? This is insanity. And the Republicans know it's wrong and they're still agreeing to it. They're saying, well, Obama won the election. Well, so in other words, because Obama won the election, according to them, by the way, I think the election was filled with voter fraud. But according to them, Obama won the election. Even if, let's assume that's true, that Obama won the election. And I don't believe that. I think he won fraudulently. But let's assume that's true. So because you're in the minority, you give up on your principles. You don't keep fighting for what's right. You cave in to the majority, even if the majority is wrong. That's not a leader. Those aren't leaders. They're a joke. And it's not just on taxes. Look at how they're speaking. Sean Hannity and all the others are speaking about the need to open borders up and to legalize all the illegal aliens. I mean, this is insanity. This is the solution they're offering? America needs to hear that there is another way. America needs to hear that when it seemed hopeless in the late 70s and in 1980, and when America was completely falling apart, and the Republican establishment said, if you stand up for true conservative principles, you'll never win, and Ronald Reagan ignored that, and his supporters ignored that, and they took over the Republican Party against the wishes of the Republican establishment that fought them tooth and nail. When that happened, and everybody assumed it was all over, and the Jimmy Carter people were actually... They were actually drinking champagne and celebrating when Reagan won the Republican nomination. They were popping the champagne bottles, the corks on the champagne bottles, and celebrating and drinking. They were drinking. And they were so thrilled that Reagan had become the Republican nominee. They were so convinced this was going to be another Goldwater. Goldwater lost by a landslide in 1964. Because he was a terrible candidate, but Reagan was not Goldwater. They thought he would be because they thought conservatism will not be acceptable to the American people. And Ronald Reagan ran a true conservative campaign, attacked Jimmy Carter relentlessly, ran commercials against him brilliantly, and his message was brilliant on his commercials. Remember the videos we did against Barack Hussein Obama? Our videos were also brilliant, by the way. Our videos were great. Thanks to the great Shlomo, our videos were great. We're the best anti-Obama videos on the internet. And Reagan's commercials in 1980 were brilliant. If we had run that type of campaign against Barack Hussein Obama, I'm telling you that despite voter fraud, we would have won by a big enough margin that even with voter fraud, Obama could never have pretended to get reelected. There would have been no chance for him. It is not yet hopeless. Not yet. United States is not yet finished. If people wake up. If people don't wake up, then it is hopeless. If people go along and cave in and do what the Republican establishment is saying we should do, then it's hopeless. Yes, then it is hopeless. But if people wake up, it's not. Don't you want Americans to hear that message? Don't you want Americans to hear a message that says that America needs lower taxes, less government, less regulation, less bureaucracy. That America needs to repeal Obamacare. Despite the results of the election, we still should be saying that America should be repealing Obamacare. That America needs to secure her borders. That America needs to expel the illegal aliens from the United States who are here illegally. What part of the word illegal do people don't understand? America also needs to end all foreign aid, especially to Israel. Foreign aid to Israel is a disaster for Israel. All foreign aid should end. And America needs true energy independence, an aggressive program for true energy independence to put the Muslim Nazis out of business, the Muslim Nazi oil producers out of business. and America needs to support an Israeli strike on Muslim terrorist Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. And if either get Israel to do it or the United States should do it. That's an agenda we should be promoting. That's an agenda worth promoting. Wouldn't you want to see, don't you want to see the people of Israel and the people of the United States hear our message? Wouldn't this be a better world if everyone heard this message? And don't you think if they heard this message on a regular basis that it would change things? Of course it would change things. There's no question. In Israel, we would have a movement of mass resistance to expulsions and retreat, and there would not be a Palestine state. And in America, you would finally get a true conservative movement developed, and we'd be on our way to once again having a shot at turning things around for the next election in 4 years. As difficult as it is, as painful as it is that we have this Muslim beast in the White House for the next 4 years, at least if we had a true conservative movement and finally learned our lesson, we'd have a shot at turning the situation around 4 years from now. If not, if we don't do it, you know what's going to happen? The borders are going to be open. The illegal aliens are going to be legalized. America demographically is going to become majority third world, majority non-white, majority third world very quickly. Hillary Clinton is going to be elected 4 years from now. It's not going to be an end to Obama and the Democrats. Hillary Clinton, according to the polls, already has a big lead, both for the Democrat nomination and in November. She has a big lead. She's the heavy favorite to get elected. That's where we're headed if we don't wake up. If we don't start fighting back and waking up and standing uncompromisingly for principles, that's where we're headed. Either we go the Reagan direction and find a Reagan-esque type leader, or America's finished. And of course, it affects Israel tremendously as well. Because if we had a true conservative movement here pushing against foreign aid and pushing for the destruction of Iran's nuclear program and pushing for energy independence, that's not just good for America, that's also good for very, very good and very important for Israel as well. If you agree that this is an essential message, if you agree that this is very important, that the American people have to hear this message, and that the people of Israel have to hear this message, help us. Help us. I know that we're fighting an uphill battle. And I know that it's not easy. But you know how hard we're fighting. You know that Shlomo and myself, you know that we're working day and night to try to turn this around and try to make a difference. We're not going to give up, and neither should you. And if you want to be part of that effort to do everything we can to make a difference, help us. Number one, help us with our videos. When we put up videos either in Hebrew or in English, either one, even if you don't speak Hebrew, go to the Hebrew video and help us because you want us to reach more people in Israel. Go to the videos, like the videos, favorite the videos, comment on the videos, share the videos on Facebook, mirror the videos on YouTube. Do all the things you have to do. Like the videos on Facebook as well, YouTube and Facebook. Help with the videos, both on YouTube and on Facebook. Help us promote those videos in Hebrew and in English. And also help us with our forum and our Facebook pages. Make sure to join both the... We have two English Facebook pages now. We have the Romney Ryan, the old Romney Ryan one, because stupid Facebook doesn't allow us to change the name, so we have to create a new Jewish task force one. So we have two English Facebook pages. We want to maintain and strengthen both of them. And we've got the Hebrew Facebook page. Help us with all of that. Post on our Facebook pages. Post on our forums. Make the forums and the Facebook pages more inviting. We got hundreds of new members now. We've gotten hundreds of new members because of our great videos. Since the election, we've had hundreds of new members. We have over 17,000 views just on one video that we did a week ago. Over 17,000 views on the video saying that Romney won the election, that Romney defeated Obama, if not for voter fraud. On that video, which is about a week old, we've got over 17,000 views on there already. And we got more than 200 new members on the English forum because of that. So, you know, help us with these things. Help us on YouTube and help us on Facebook. Make this more inviting so that people won't just join, that they'll want to participate and become active with us. If everyone who has joined us becomes truly active with us, we can make quite a difference. We've got enough people to make quite a difference. We've got thousands of members on both forums. And most importantly, we need financial support. Our pathetic joke of a budget is really what has hampered us more than anything. People that help us are doing the most blessed thing. People with their credit cards, they go to the hayamin.org main page and the jtf.org. jtf.org is our English main page. In fact, if you speak English, you're probably better off. You can go to either one, but the jtf.org English main page you can go to. There's a donate button on top. You click on the donate button, and in several minutes, you can help us. You can do it on the English main page, or you can do it on the Hebrew main page. Just click on the donate button on top. And equally important are people who send us through the regular mail checks, money orders, and cash donations to our post office box. That's equally important. God bless the great, generous JTFers who on a regular basis have been generously supporting us. God bless you. Whatever we have been able to do, the people we have been able to reach, you are responsible for that. And by the way, we're already influencing some of the politicians in the election campaign. They're still rotten politicians. They're still saying terrible things, but they steal some of our lines already. They're already stealing some of our stuff from our videos. They already steal some of our lines from our videos. From our Hebrew videos. God bless the great JTFers who help us. God bless you and your loved ones in this world and the next, because we cannot be silent. We're not allowed to be silent. We have to speak out. We have to stand up. We have to do everything we can. I can't promise you success. Success I can't promise you. But I can promise you, and you know this, those of you that have been with us for years now, you know that we're going to do everything we can and try as hard as we can to make as big a difference as possible. That we can promise you. And that's something you should also be doing. You should be a part of as well. Anyway, let's go now to our great questions from our great JTFers. Let me just reduce this and go back to this page here. There we go. And we start out with Chewbacca, who is new to the forum. Welcome to the forum, Chewbacca. Chewbacca writes, and I quote, "There has been talk of John Kerry being the next Secretary of State. Does he have the same bad prognosis toward Israel as did Hillary Clinton?" Unquote. Okay, great question. Absolutely. John Kerry is very anti-Israel. His father was a secret Jew whose real name was Cohen and changed his name to Kerry. You know, those are always the worst type of self-hating Jews. So he was raised in a home with a father who was ashamed to be Jewish, who was a Jewish anti-Semite, and married outside the Jewish faith, of course. And John Kerry is filled with that desire to destroy his own, you know, to destroy that part of him that's connected, even though he's not Jewish. Under Jewish law, you have to have a Jewish mother to be Jewish, and his mother is not Jewish. But he still feels, because of his father, that he has this connection to the Jewish people, which he despises, which he hates. And he would do everything in his power to hurt the state of Israel, to harm the state, to literally destroy the state of Israel together with Barack Hussein Obama and the way Hillary Clinton has been doing. So there is no difference. John Kerry is a catastrophe for Israel. Anyway, thank you very much, Chewbacca. And now we go to the great Brennan fan who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you believe that at this time average Americans have become actively anti-Israel, anti-Semitic at their very core?" Unquote. I think that the fact that a majority of Americans are willing to support policies that are anti-Israel, or at least be silent, that's obvious. The average American doesn't care about Israel, doesn't care about these issues. It's hard to get the average American to care about America, let alone Israel, of which is a foreign country. But the average American does. The average American just wants to either watch TV or drink beer and eat pizza and watch football games and basketball games, or if it's women, watch soap operas and cooking shows and other nonsense. I mean, you know, the average American is involved and absorbed in their own little world, their own little lives, and they don't think about the rest of the world. They don't think about what's happening all around them. Some of it is because they're depressed and they feel it's hopeless and so on and so forth. Of course it's hopeless. If everybody's going to have this attitude, it's going to be hopeless. And then it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But there's no question that the majority of the Americans couldn't care less about the survival of Israel. It's something that doesn't interest them. And does that mean that it's that the situation has to remain that way? No, it doesn't. It doesn't, because there are still tens of millions of Americans who are Bible-believing Christians, basically the Bible-believing Christians, who really do care about Israel and do love Israel. And hopefully, you know, hopefully if JTF could reach enough people with our message, hopefully we would get more people to care about this issue and understand this issue and understand why the survival of Israel is essential to the survival of the whole world. Anyway, thank you very much, Brennan Fan. And now we go to the great Yimashmo to Obama, who writes, and I quote, Dear Chaim, what is more harmful to the body, smoking or drinking, unquote? Well, obviously both of them are harmful if someone drinks in excess. Smoking is harmful under all circumstances. Even if you smoke just one cigarette, it hurts your body. It's harmful to your body. Smoking is pure poison. It's a drug, and it's pure poison, and it does terrible damage to your system. Drinking is only harmful if it's done in excess. People who have a beer every now and then, or we Jews drink wine on the Sabbath. We don't drink a lot, but we drink some wine on the Sabbath. We're not supposed to drink a lot, let's put it that way. But we drink wine on the Sabbath. That's not bad if you do it in real moderation. But of course, if you do it in excess, then it happens to be very, very harmful. And there are certain people who should not drink because they can't control themselves. If their people can't control themselves, they shouldn't touch it. Drinking in excess is devastating to the body. Anyone who drinks in excess is devastating. Anyway, thank you very much, Yimach Shmo. So basically, the answer to the question is there should be people. God forbid they should not smoke under any circumstances. That should be completely out of the question. And drinking should not be done in excess. And now we go to the great Chicago Jew, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, when and where are your monthly meetings? I plan on visiting New York next year, unquote. Well, we have a schedule of our meetings, which we post, which we did post before on the forum. They're usually the third Thursday of every month, unless it's a Jewish holiday, unless there's some real special reason. Usually it's the third Thursday of every month we have our meetings. Where they are, you can write to me, and when the time comes, you let me know. Give me some advance notice when you're coming. If you can give me some advance notice, maybe, you know, we'll let people know, and you know, because we want people to come and see you. We'd like people to come and see you at the meeting. So you can give me some advance. If you give me some advance notice, we'll be happy to tell you exactly where the meeting is, and we'll coordinate this. We'll coordinate this through private messages. Anyway, thank you, Chicago Jew, and now we go to the great LKZ, who writes, and I quote: "Shalom, do you trust Harper?" Okay, let's start with that question first. No, I don't. And you know, I praised him in the past because I thought that he had made pro-Israel statements, but He's been telling Israel you're not allowed to build Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria. He's been telling Israel that they have to support a Palestine state. He's been talking about the peace process. So he's not a friend of Israel. This is baloney. I mean, that's suicide for Israel. What type of friend of Israel tells Israel to accept a suicide process and tells Israel that they're not allowed to have Jews living in their own homeland, in their own historic homeland? He's not a genuine friend of Israel. I don't know if he's just trying to get Jewish votes from Jewish Canadians, or what his story is, but he's proven that he's insincere. And then LKZ writes, "Would either Quebec separation or states secession be good for the West?" Unquote. LKZ, I don't know. I don't know enough to tell you. I know that there's a lot of anti-Semitism in Quebec. I don't know. I don't know what the effect would be. I honestly, I haven't studied it. I don't know what the effect would be if Quebec seceded from the rest of Canada. I don't know if that would be good or bad, or I assume that English-speaking people in Quebec would not be happy with that. I think most Canadian Jews are against it because of the history of anti-Semitism in Quebec. But what the effect would be, I honestly don't know enough to tell you. Anyway, thank you, LKZ. And now we go to the great Tag Mechir Tzedek, who writes, and I quote, "What halachic justification jurisdiction is there to prohibit marijuana, even if it's harmful on a personal level?" Unquote. That is a great question, and I'm going to answer that. You know what? I'm going to try to answer that in detail because it's an important question, because we did a video on Moshe Feiglin, the so-called right-winger, coming out in favor of legalizing marijuana and what he calls soft drugs. And marijuana actually is harmful. There's no question it's harmful. Research shows it's harmful. It is addictive, and it is a gateway drug. It does lead to the use of harder drugs among maybe 10 to 20% of the people who smoke marijuana. So it's definitely harmful. And I know, by the way, I have known people that I grew up with who actually came from wealthy, successful families and who became what we call potheads, who started smoking and who become lethargic and don't want to work and don't want to, and you know, one thing leads to another, and you know, it's bad for them. It's bad for their health. It's bad for their lives. It's just bad. It's a bad drug. And they become addicted to it. They can't live without it. They can't go to sleep without smoking pot every night. Anyway, here's the Jewish reasons why, the halachic Torah reasons why you're not allowed to smoke marijuana. Or for that matter, to use any of these other harmful drugs. Number one, you're not allowed to use something that's harmful to your health. You're not allowed to harm your health. God gave us our bodies. Our bodies are holy and sacred. Because our bodies are our vehicle. They're the thing that we use in this world to make this a better world and to change things for the better. And so anything that's harmful to the body is an attack on something that God has given us, something sacred. Our bodies are sacred. And so you're not allowed to put anything harmful to your health in your body. Secondly, marijuana is harmful to your judgment. You can't concentrate on properly learning Torah, on praying, on doing mitzvot when you're high. Even after you're high, your mind is not exactly what it was before smoking. Smoking is just bad for you. It's bad for your ability to concentrate and think, but especially when you're high. When you're high, you're not able to learn Torah. You're not able to pray properly. You're not able to perform mitzvot. I mean, obviously, that certainly is forbidden. You can't put yourself in a situation where you're not allowed, where you can't perform mitzvot, where you can't say your prayers properly, or where you can't learn Torah. I mean, that goes against your whole reason for existence as a Jew. Thirdly, this causes addiction. Marijuana and all substances like it cause addiction to ta'avot. Ta'avot are lusts, are like things you lust after. When you smoke marijuana, you have less restraint, you have less discipline to not lust after what we call ta'avot. Once you start becoming a regular smoker, you're more likely to engage in other types of forbidden behaviors, like forbidden sex, or you're likely to less strictly observe Shabbat and the holidays. You may not strictly observe kashrut, eating kosher, because you figure, I'm smoking pot already. What's the big deal if I also do this in terms of kashrut? Or you become more lax. And it's a very slippery slope. Once you go down that slippery path of lust and immorality, once you go down that slippery path of accepting ta'avot, of giving in to your ta'avot, your desires, your darker desires, that's a slippery slope. And it only leads to bad things. It's something that absolutely we should never do in Judaism. We're supposed to have mishmat, we're supposed to have discipline. And true liberation is not smoking and lusting after things, and that's a slave. Someone who's a slave to their lusts is not really alive, is like a dead person. Someone who has true discipline and who has self-control and who leads a proper life, and we should enjoy our lives. I'm not saying that we should live like monks. We're supposed to, in Judaism, we're supposed to enjoy our lives. We're supposed to eat and drink and sleep and get married and have relations and love our wives. We're supposed to do all of these things. We're supposed to enjoy life. But we're supposed to enjoy life in the way that the Torah and God have intended for us to enjoy life, because only then will we truly enjoy life. Only then will we truly enjoy life as truly free people. And finally, another reason why someone should not smoke marijuana, it's dishonoring your parents. This is not the way you honor your parents. You require, one of the commandments is supposed to honor your parents. That's how you honor your parents, whether they're alive or whether they're no longer with us. Even if they're no longer with us, they watch from the other world, they watch everything we do. You think your parents want normal parents want their kids to be smoking pot, become potheads? To put this poison in their brain that causes them to be high and live in another world? It's dishonoring your parents. And finally, it's violating the mitzvah of Kedoshim Tihiyu. Kedoshim Tihiyu means be holy. We're required to be a holy people in a holy nation. It says, because God is holy, we're supposed to be holy. He wants us to be holy as well. Kedoshim Tihiyu. That's a commandment. And we're not allowed to violate that. What, are you going to be holy if you're smoking marijuana? Come on. That's a desecration. That's degrading and it's depravity. It's degeneracy. Holy people don't smoke pot or take drugs. So for all of those reasons, we should definitely stay away from marijuana and all narcotics. Drugs are only for sick people. Drugs should only be used if you're sick and you have to have, you know, you go to the hospital and the doctor has to give you a drug because, God forbid, lo aleinu, it shouldn't be upon us. You're sick. That's what drugs are for. Drugs are not to get high. They're not for what we call recreational purposes. They're not for pleasure. If that's what you need for pleasure, and if you need to get high for recreational purposes, there's something very wrong. We're not allowed to do those things. That's not the Jewish way. Anyway, thank you, Tag Mechir Tzedek. And now we go to the great Dr. Dan. And Dr. Dan, the voice of wisdom, common sense, and logic, writes, and I quote, "Jewish man married a Muslim woman, had a son, got divorced, son is gay. The Jewish grandmother caused the divorce. Gay son hates grandma. Your thoughts?" Unquote. Well, quite a mess, Dr. Dan. Quite a mess. First of all, I don't have to tell you what a serious sin it is when a Jewish man marries outside the Jewish faith and he marries a Muslim, a religion that is so committed to the destruction of the Jewish people. I mean, what results are you going to expect? So now they have a son. Thank God he divorced. Thank God he divorced the woman. He did the right thing by divorcing her. He did do the right thing. But the Jewish grandmother was right to get them divorced or to cause the divorce. The Jewish grandmother was right, and he certainly did the right thing getting out of that terrible situation. But now they produced a son, and look, the son obviously has serious problems. And I'm certainly not trying to offend people. And I know this is politically incorrect, but gay is not normal. There's something wrong with that son. I mean, the son has a problem. And he may even be rebelling. I don't know. I don't know why he's doing what he's doing, but that's not the normal way to go. And he hates the grandmother because the grandmother wanted to end a marriage that was forbidden and that was something that was doomed. The son, by the way, the son is not Jewish. So his son is not Jewish. But, you know, hopefully you would hope that if the father was Jewish, that at least he'd be a Ben Noach. At least he would follow the laws of Noah. It's a mess. It's a mess, Dr. Dan. I don't know what to tell you. It's obviously a mess. The son, I mean, if the father obviously loves his son, and, you know, the son has to understand that Jews are only supposed to marry their fellow Jews, even though the son is not Jewish, but he should understand that His father is Jewish, and Jews are only supposed to marry their fellow Jews. And he should also understand that homosexuality is a very serious sin, and that he's leading a life of self-destruction if he's going to lead a homosexual life. How you convey that message to somebody in such a terrible situation, that's quite a challenge. I agree that's quite a challenge, but that's the true message. That's the true message that has to be conveyed, one way or another. Anyway, Dr. Dan, thanks for the question. I'm sorry I can't give you a more definitive answer, but that basically is what has to be done. How exactly you do it, every person is different. How you convince this son is not easy because every person is different, but that's basically what the challenge is, in the way I see it. Anyway, thank you, Dr. Dan. And now we go to Say No to Islam, another great JTFer who writes, and I quote, "One, what are your thoughts on Obama supporting Judenrat Scarlett Johansson?" Okay, let's start with that first question. Well, first of all, Scarlett Johansson is a product, I'm pretty sure she's a product of intermarriage. I think she had a Jewish mother and a Danish father, if I'm not mistaken. You see, this is what happens. When you go against God's commandments, this is what it leads to. This is what it leads to. So she's a product of intermarriage. She's Jewish because her mother is Jewish. But still, she's a product of intermarriage, and you see the mess that comes out. When that happens, you see that it's always a mess. It's almost always a mess. And so she does support Obama. She also supports other leftists. She's supported other leftists, campaigned for other leftists. And she's also intermarried, by the way. She's Jewish. She's not allowed to intermarry either. She also, under Jewish law, she's required also to marry a Jew, because she's Jewish. She's also intermarried, though. She also married outside the Jewish faith. So she's just a terrible disaster who leads people down the wrong path. She's a terrible role model. She's not only for herself, she's a bad role model, but she creates evil and supports evil and spreads evil because she's a famous public figure. Other people may follow in her footsteps, God forbid. So she's become a terrible person. And again, it just shows what intermarriage leads to. And now Say No to Islam writes, "Two," and I quote, "Two, I read that Stern and Lehi supported USSR. Is that true?" Unquote. No, it certainly is not true. Certainly is not true. Avraham Stern, Zecher Tzaddik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, may the memory of the saint be immortalized, may God avenge his blood, was a great Jew. He wanted to get support from wherever he could get support to save the Jewish people and fight against the British control of the land of Israel, to get the British out of the land of Israel. Because the Lehi, which were the fighters for the freedom of Israel, they were an underground group that were fighting to get the British out of Israel. So he wanted the Soviets to support the creation of a Jewish state. And he wanted, if he could, he wanted to get arms from the Soviets and help from the Soviets, but he certainly did not support the Soviet Union. I mean, Avraham Stern was a very proud Jew. The Soviet Union murdered Jews. When Avraham Stern was alive, Joseph Stalin, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, was the dictator of the Soviet Union. He would never support a monstrous dictator that had murdered Jews and put Jews in front of firing squads and sent them to Siberian concentration camps and outlawed all Judaism. He would never support a monster like that. Of course not. Of course not. He did want to get whatever support he could get from the Soviets to help create a Jewish state because we were facing a Holocaust in Europe, and we had to create a Jewish state and we had to save the Jewish people. But he did not support the USSR. That certainly is not true. Anyway, thank you, Say No to Islam. And now we go to Leftists Destroy the West, who is a new member of our forum. Welcome to our forum, Leftists Destroy the West. And Leftists Destroy the West writes, and I quote, "Dear Chaim, what are your thoughts on Kent Hovind and the whole young earth creationist movement?" Unquote. Okay, first of all, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly, Kent Hovind. I mean, I remember reading about him. He's the guy who had the park with the dinosaurs and the people in the same time. I remember him also making anti-Semitic statements and anti-Israel statements. So I don't know what type of Christian would be making statements, if he really believes in the Bible, against Israel and against the Jewish people. What type of Christian? What type of Christian would make statements like that? How could he? How could he claim to believe in the Bible, which warns you that you have to support Israel and you have to support the Jews, and then make anti-Semitic statements? And now he's in prison for 10 years on tax fraud and tax evasion charges. Not that I care about. I don't care about the tax fraud and tax evasion charges because I hate taxes, and you know, I'm a little embarrassed myself that I even pay taxes. I do pay taxes because I don't want to go to prison. But I don't want to pay tax. I also don't want to pay taxes. I hate taxes, and I hate the federal government. I despise the federal government, and I, you know, so I don't have anything against anybody that doesn't want to pay their taxes. So I wouldn't be against him on those grounds. If he was engaged in fraud or something else, that might be another story. Then I would be against it. But in any event, you know, the fact that he made anti-Semitic, anti-Israel statements, to me, that tells it all. I mean, he is somebody, you know, he is somebody who has betrayed, you know, betrayed all the principles that he's supposed to be standing for in the worst way possible. Anyway, thank you, Leftists Destroy the West. And now we go to the great Selhar, who is a member of both the Hebrew and the English forums. And Selhar writes, and I quote, "Have you heard of Shimon Warrenker? A Chabadnik who is headmaster of the New American Academy, PS 770 in Queens, New York. Is he training the next Sharptons?" Unquote. He uses PS 770. You mean they actually named it PS 7? You know, 770 is the headquarters of Chabad in Crown Heights. Did they name the school PS 770 after Chabad? Because the men, I'm sure the students there are almost all black. I don't know. I think it's crazy. I think it's absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. I don't know. You know, I don't know how Jews could overlook the fact that they have a people that is so anti-Semitic and so violently anti-Jewish and want to help that people and want to show how nice they are and help that people. That's just sick beyond words. This is what he spends his time doing. This is what he wants to spend his time doing, helping black Jew haters instead of helping the Jewish people at a time when the Jewish people are in so much trouble. I mean, I think it's grotesque. I think it's disgusting. Just disgusting. I wouldn't give them anything. I wouldn't do anything to help those Jew-hating pigs. I wouldn't give them anything. And I'm not saying all blacks are Jew haters, but the vast majority are. That's reality. And I would not do anything to help them. Anyway, thank you, Tselhar. And now we go to the great Maimonides, who writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, do you believe that Obama will seize people's retirement accounts and put them into the Social Security Ponzi scheme?" Unquote. Maimonides, I think anything is possible. I think anything is possible with Obama. I don't see that happening right away, because you still have a Republican House and you still have certain things that might prevent that from happening right away. But anything is possible. Anything is possible in the future. Who knows? Who knows? The retirement account, all these people's retirement accounts, by the way, some of them are deep in debt. You know, who knows what's going to be? I have no idea what's going to be. What can I say? What can I say? The one hope we have, Maimonides, as I've been saying ever since the terrible results of the election, the one hope we have is that there'll be a backlash against Obama and that we'll be able to ride on the wave of that backlash to turn things around. That's the only hope we have left as far as America's future is concerned. If that doesn't happen, then America's finished. America's finished if that doesn't happen. It's the end of America. If there's not a backlash against Obama after his policies fail, if the American people vote for Hillary Clinton in 2016, and if they give Obama what he wants during the next 4 years, and this just continues and goes right along, and America's borders are opened up, and all these terrible things happen, America's finished if that happens. That's the end of America. So, you know, that's why JTF wants to deliver a message to the American people about true conservative principles, because it's the last shot America has. Anyway, thank you very much, Maimonides. And now we go to the great EB22, who writes, and I quote, "Please discuss your opinion of Naftali Bennett in terms of his positions in upcoming Israeli election," unquote. Okay. I spoke about him actually in my opening to a certain degree, E.B. E.B. is one of those members on our forum who always reads my mind. He always knows what I'm going to say before I say it. But anyway, he figures out the subjects I'm going to speak about before I get to speak about them. Or before, you know, before I've even said a word, he already knows in his questions a lot of the stuff that I'm going to say, he already knows. Anyway, Naftali Bennett is the head of what's called Habayit HaYehudi, which is the Jewish home. And which is a terrible party, by the way. It was known as the Maftal. It was a terrible party, a party that supported creating the Jewish state in Uganda instead of in the land of Israel. A party that will do anything to hold their seats and to stay in power. Party with zero principles. A party that you can bribe. I mean, if you offer them the right amount, they'll convert to Islam. That's the type of party it is. And although I'm exaggerating to a certain degree, my exaggeration is not that tremendous. I mean, these people supported the retreat from the entire Sinai. I mean, these people have sold out again and again and again. Naftali Bennett is the new chairman of this party. He was also in charge of the Yesha Council, which is the Moetzet Yesha, which is the worst organization imaginable. The organization that absolutely neutered and destroyed any resistance to the expulsion in Gush Katif, and that destroys and neuters resistance to all expulsions in Judea and Samaria. He was the head of the Yesha Council, the ultimate sellout organization, the ultimate corrupt organization. He was also a top aide to Bibi Netanyahu. He helped elect Bibi Netanyahu. Then he resigned because they had differences. They had personal differences. He resigned. But to this day, he says when he and his party get elected, they're going to support Bibi. They're going to support Bibi Netanyahu, and they're going to be part of his coalition. They're going to be part of Bibi's government. So if you like Bibi, and you like the expulsion of Jews from Judea and Samaria, and you like his policies of surrender and not doing anything about the Iranian nuclear threat and all the other terrible things we've seen from Bibi, if that's what, you know, if that's the policy that people like, that's what you're going to get by voting for Naftali Bennett as well. He's a super rich high-tech elitist. This guy made a fortune in the high-tech industry in Israel. He's very, very wealthy now, which, again, I'm not against somebody for succeeding, as long as they use, when they succeed, they should use what God has given them for good purposes. He definitely is not doing that. So, you know, he is not, in my opinion, he doesn't represent the best for Israel. Also, he proposes, he supports allowing millions of Arabs to remain in the land of Israel. He's against any program to encourage the Arabs to leave Israel. He has no problem with millions of Arabs remaining in the land of Israel, which of course is suicide. And he even wants to give Israeli citizenship to tens of thousands of additional Arabs. You know, many Arabs in Judea and Samaria don't have Israeli citizenship now, so they can't vote and they don't have certain ability to do certain harm to us. They still do harm to us, but their harm will increase if we give them citizenship. And he wants to give Israeli citizenship to tens of thousands of more Arabs. That's brilliant. That's just what Israel needs. We're going to have tens of thousands of more Arab citizens voting and getting involved and having all the benefits of Israeli society bending over backwards to help their enemies. So he is bad news. EB, all the politicians in Israel running now, in my opinion, are bad. I know that that's not... You think I like saying that? You think I enjoy saying that? Of course I hate saying that. And of course it doesn't sound good. The best thing would be if I could tell you, oh, this one's better than that one. I can't. They're terrible. They are terrible. We've got to reach the people of Israel, EB, with our message. We've got to reach them and convince them to change what's going on now. We've got to wake them up. There is no other way. Anyway, thank you, EB. And now we go to Wolf, who is new to our forum. Welcome to our forum, Wolf. Wolf writes, Shalom Chaim, is egg and cheese kosher? Yes, it is. And then Wolf writes, if so, why is chicken and cheese not kosher? Unquote. Well, because the egg is not the same as the chicken. When the chicken produces the egg, it's different. It's a different entity, and there are different rules and laws. It's like bees are not kosher, but the honey from the bee is kosher. The bee itself is not kosher, even though the honey is produced from the bee. The bee produces honey. And yet, the bee itself obviously we're not allowed to eat bees. It's not kosher. And I know there are people saying, oh, you know, who would eat bees? But believe me, there are people in this, a lot of people in this crazy world, and especially historically, who do eat insects. In Jewish, under Jewish law, it's not kosher. You're not allowed to. And yet the honey is kosher because it's not the same law. An egg is not the same as slaughtering the chicken. A chicken you have to slaughter. A chicken is a live animal that God created, and you have to slaughter the chicken. You have to slaughter the chicken humanely, but you have to slaughter the chicken in order to eat the chicken. Whereas an egg is not the same situation. An egg is not a live animal or a live creature. It's just the yolk of a creature. So it's not, you don't have the same laws and rules. Just like a bee is also a live creature. And if we consume bees, or if we consume bees, it's harm. The Judaism, the Torah believes that it's not good for us physically or spiritually to consume bees and other insects. But the honey is not considered to be harmful to us. And the same thing is true. So you have that basic rule that things can change when something comes out of a chicken, like an egg. The chicken is not, the rules of the egg are not the same as the rules for the chicken. Because the egg is not a live creature. And so eating egg and cheese is permitted, whereas eating chicken and cheese is not permitted because chicken is meat that comes from a live creature. By the way, I want to add that even though egg and cheese are kosher, they're not healthy. So I would advise our great JTFers not to eat that because it's very high in cholesterol and very high in saturated fat. So I would advise them not to eat that. But anyway, hopefully that answers the question, Wolf. Thank you for the question. And now we go to the great Gimatria, who writes, and I quote, Chaim HaGibor, what should we do about Jews giving gifts on Chanukah? Should we actively try to prevent them from doing so? It feels somehow wrong, unquote. Well, I understand why you're saying that, because some people think Chanukah is just a substitute for a non-Jewish holiday that comes around the same time of the year. And of course it's not. Chanukah is a Jewish holiday with Jewish meaning, and it's not meant to be a Jewish version of another holiday. So I understand why you're saying that. You know, we, Gematria, it's just one out of a million things that Jews do when they're influenced by the Galut. When they live in the Galut, the exile, and they're influenced by the Galut, and they feel they have to do things, they feel compelled to do things the way other people do things, even though the Jews are supposed to have their rules and their laws and live by them. You know, and unfortunately, instead, they want to imitate and mimic, and that's something, of course, that we are forbidden to do. When you say, should we try to actively prevent, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could explain to Jews the meaning of Chanukah, what it really stands for and what it really means and why we should be proud to be Jewish. And Chanukah, by the way, for these Jews would be, they actually, I don't think they would want to celebrate Chanukah if they knew what it really means. Chanukah is the ultimate rebellion against Jews that want to assimilate. The ultimate rebellion that the Maccabees killed the Jewish assimilationists. The very first person that was killed was a Jew that wanted to make a sacrifice in the Holy Temple to idols. He was the very first one who was killed by the Maccabees. So the whole story of Chanukah is a rebellion against self-hating Jews who want to assimilate, and a rebellion against those who want to force us to assimilate. Instead, the whole purpose is turned upside down. It's turned on its head by the assimilated Jews of our generation. Unfortunate, but the answer is really to teach people what true Jewish values. That's the real answer. Anyway, thank you, Gematria. And now we go to the great Ephraim, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, could you talk a little about the Maccabean revolt, unquote. Okay, great question, Ephraim. The Greek Hellenists, who took over the land of Israel, basically outlawed Judaism. They weren't Nazis like in the Hitlerian sense that wanted to exterminate the Jews as a people physically. They just didn't want the Jews following laws in the Torah that contradicted the laws of the Greek Hellenist culture. Certain laws they didn't mind from the Torah. Certain laws were okay in the Torah with them, as long as it doesn't contradict their laws. But if there were laws like for instance, circumcision, they outlawed circumcision. They outlawed putting on tefillin, which is the phylacteries that Jews put on every weekday. They outlawed Jewish holidays. They outlawed studying of the Torah in a religious sense. You could study the Torah. They said it was okay to study the Torah as a philosophy. They were big on philosophy, the Greek Hellenists. You could study it as a philosophical type of thing in the university, like other philosophies. But you're not allowed to actually look upon it as the unique religion of God and that you have to follow it like a religion. That you're not allowed to do. So they basically outlawed being a Torah Jew. And the Maccabees led a revolt against them and against this, and many, if not for the majority of the Jews in that generation, they thought that the Greek Hellenists were so enlightened and so brilliant and such great philosophers that many of the Jews wanted to follow in their way. The Jews became Hellenists. Many of them became Hellenists and were following in the Hellenistic assimilationist tradition, which of course is the end of the Jewish people if they do that. And so the Maccabees were a minority of the Jews who started a revolt against all of that. Started a revolt against the self-hating Jewish assimilationists and against the Greek Hellenist invaders of the land of Israel. It was a revolt against all odds, overwhelming odds against the Jews. And despite being overwhelmingly outnumbered and outgunned, it was an incredible, miraculous, spectacular victory. The Jews really started guerrilla warfare. They really created the techniques of guerrilla warfare in that revolt and later used them again also against the Romans. And their bravery and their valor and the brilliant military maneuvers that they used against their enemies are something that to this day military strategists study, because they really were brilliant in how they outmaneuvered enemies that outnumbered them with such huge, I mean, they were at such a huge disadvantage numerically and in terms of arms and weapons and everything else. Tremendous disadvantage. So they led this revolt and liberated the land of Israel and restored the Holy Temple, and they restored Judaism to the land of Israel, and actually restored a Jewish kingdom to the land of Israel. So it was quite a spectacular revolt. And unfortunately, in the end, they fell because they also, because they did things that they weren't supposed to do. They installed kings from the holy priest, from the priestly line. In other words, the people from the Levite, from the tribe of the Levites, became kings. And that was not allowed. Once King David was a king, now every king after King David is supposed to come from the Davidic lineage. All kings are supposed to come from the lineage of King David and from the tribe of Judah, from the tribe of Yehuda. That's what Jews are commanded to do now for eternity. And they decided, they were from the priestly tribe, from the Levites and the Kohanim, and they decided the Kohanim, the Kohanim are the priests, they decided that they're going to be the kings of Israel, and so they actually set up four different kings in a row from the priestly tribe, and it led to their downfall because they went against the laws that God had established. But the initial revolt they saved Judaism and the Jewish people in their initial revolt. They actually saved Judaism and the Jewish people and restored Jewish sovereignty to a certain degree, and it was an incredibly miraculous revolt. If only they had stayed true and not deviated and it been uncompromising in their principles, and it stayed true to their principles all the way, it could have led to the final redemption. Anyway, thank you very much, Ephraim. And that just goes to show that the uncompromising idealists, that's what we need. That's what we need, uncompromising idealism. We have that. We can go all the way and we can save Israel and save the righteous throughout the world. In any event, I want to thank you, Ephraim, and I want to thank all of our great members. Until next week, shalom.